We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 307 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and I'm joined again by Joel McGoy, Koistin Shuk from Barca Universal, Total Football Analysis, and Johannes Rondos, and he's here to break down the Villarreal win, plus answer some tough questions about Xavi's Barcelona. Are you ready to go, Joel McGoy?
Yeah, sure, let's do this.
All right, well, as much as I say, let's get started. Actually, I want to say before we get started talking about FC Barcelona, who do celebrate their birthday today, it's from 1899 all the way to today. So, you know, I mean, for those longtime listeners, you know, I'm all about the history. You know, I'm all about the yada, yada, yada. Maybe I'll do something about that later. But yeah, for now, happy birthday to the club. And I also want to get the Ballon d'Or stuff out of the way quickly. It's the whole buzz while we record this. So it feels like our whole world, right? But it'll be out of the news cycle by Thursday's show. It'll be out of the news cycle by tomorrow, right? 12 hours, whenever you're listening to this. So that decision only deserves the conversation on social media, I think. But obviously, the winner has been announced by the time you're hearing this. So I just want to give my two cents real quick. If Alexis Putellas doesn't win the Ballon d'Or, it just means that the voters... it just means the voters don't watch enough women's football. That's all it tells me, if she doesn't win. And that would be less surprising, I think, to me than the voters choosing Lewandowski over Messi because of the narrative and because they felt like Lewandowski missed out on 2020's win. So Alexia and Messi leagues better than all others in the last 12 months. What about you, Joel McGoy?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, with Messi, as you said, it's all about the narrative, the PR stunts. It's not really credible as much, but, you know, it should be Messi. But Alexia, I agree 100%. It's just, I don't watch Femini regularly. I'm not no expert, just to be honest here, but this is 100% deserved victory for her if she does win, which she should win. So yeah, she's a key cog in a Barcelona team that is well and truly a machine. They just brush off their opponents like it's nothing. And she is the one to make all that happen. So even if they do get stuck, which they don't often, she'd be the one creating something out of nothing. So I definitely agree. She should be the one winning it.
Yeah, the only thing I would also hold against her would be that, you know, a lot of this can be driven by English media and English bias. I mean,
of course,
Gino's still around. And so Alexia might also be punished for playing in the Spanish league, which is not obviously as competitive as Arsenal and Man City and Chelsea and in the WSL. So anyway, hopefully Alexia and Messi have won it by the time you're hearing it. If they haven't, well, then I've got a little bit of problem with it, but we move on. Alexia can just win it next year, I guess, and start to collect them like the GOAT Messi has. So yeah, so that's the Ballon d'Or stuff. Well, it feels like ancient history, though. Barcelona did beat Villarreal 3-1 on Saturday. That's mainly what we're going to talk about. So, you know, when I did the match review for YouTube a few days ago, my first point, and I think where I want to start with the broad picture, Joel McGoy, is that they did play the full 90 minutes. And I know we're going to talk about the tactics, the first issues, if you will, under Xavi, all that stuff. Yeah. But even if they didn't deserve the result, they won and they collected the 3 points. And it was a match that, again, even Xavi said Villarreal didn't deserve to lose. And I think that kind of sums up the result. But a 3-1 victory for Barcelona, it was the first time in a long time when the equalizing goal happened and I didn't feel like it was going to be a draw. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing, especially when you talk about VRL, who are kind of the experts of drawing games lately. And yeah, you said it perfectly. I mean, VRL are a good team. It was always going to be a tough match. And, you know, sometimes you just have to be able to get wins like those. I mean, it was not convincing. To be honest, the first 20 minutes were pretty good. I thought that we were really good in the first 20 minutes. We kind of controlled the game. We kind of managed to set up the tempo and control it well. And then it sort of fell apart, which is a big issue. It has been a big issue for years now. Barca haven't been able to kind of maintain dominance, even if they did manage to kind of dominate or control games for a certain period of time. So it will be something for Xavi definitely to look into. But yeah, difficult game, and I'm happy for the 3 points. Not so happy about the performance, but yeah, sometimes you just have to take those 3 points and just run away with it.
Yeah, I think Villarreal in this instance does deserve a little bit of respect. I mean, they've just been embarrassed by Manchester United. They were playing at home. I think they're at a place, that being Villarreal, where they felt at home more desperate to win than Barcelona even should have. Because Barcelona, I think for the rest of this season, until they get up to top four, which, again, I want to do the math on this, they're not too far away from. So it's still fully possible. It's still just the end of November. And so every match of Barcelona, especially from a Koulé perspective, is going to feel desperate. But for Villarreal, like, they're in the bottom of the half of the table. So it does feel a bit desperate. I think Unai Emery, to his credit, also got his tactics right about where he was trying to exploit Barcelona. And again, before we do the Xavi tactics, that's, I think, the main bulk of our show here. I do want to talk about Eze Abde, arguably the man of the match against Espanyol in the 45 minutes. He came on, the 19-year-old from Hercules, 17 appearances, 2 goals for them. I kind of mentioned it in passing before. I mean, I looked high and low for any other stories or any other pieces about his time at Hercules. And I don't think that, you know, the Spanish journalists have been so busy dealing with Xavi and so busy getting all the scoops around, let's say, the big, big stories, that his signing kind of went under the radar. He's a 200 million euro release clause. This is one of those late on signings. And I know he's 19, so he's a bit older than the likes of, I think, Pedro, when he was signed from Las Palmas, or no, for Tenerife when he was 17. Yeah, so that was like a late signing for Barca B or for the academy, but he was signed for Barca B, but the club always knew that he had the potential to reach the first team. It just happened that it was a need and a desire for him so early, but he is adept with both feet and obviously very, very fast. Mm. And, you know, Eze Abde, people are already kind of saying, okay, well, there's insurance for Dembele, but, you know, I think the Ferran Torres rumor this week tells you that the insurance for Dembele is out there, that if Dembele does leave, that means that an actual, you know, we'll say top class right winger is going to be brought in. But in the meantime, Domagoj, what have you seen from Eze Abde? And before everybody kind of overrates him and all the parody accounts pop up about him, or, you know what I mean? Not the parody accounts, whatever, the Stan accounts, right? Before they all pop up. Yeah. How do you feel about the youngster?
Oh, I love him. I love him so much because he is exactly the type of player that Xavi wants to have in his team. So one of the big things that Xavi definitely want to implement here is verticality, because that's what Barca have missed for so long. And just the pace and trickery and one-on-one duels. And even Koeman was screaming about that. He was saying that he needs that kind of a player, but, you know, Xavi now has him in Abde, and he would have him in Dembele as well if Dembele was fit, of course. But I think that Abde, he is mature for his age, which is uncommon too. And just having that natural winger with pace, that trickery and just unpredictability, that's crucial for Barcelona, because they're a team that doesn't have clear outlets, right? Apart from Jordi Alba, who is there, there's no one else. And now suddenly you have someone on the right side to kind of revive the whole flank, because the right side of Barcelona attack has been very lackluster. You know, that we've seen, you know, the likes of Sergio Roberto play there as a right wing back or a right winger. Even Dest, who is, I mean, Dest could be a decent winger, but he's not really a winger. So again, it's not really ideal. But Abde, man, I love him. I love him. And he adds that necessary spark that Barca have needed. And hopefully he gets more game time.
Yeah, I think he will get some game time still in the first team. I'm going to hedge my bet a little bit and not say that what he's done is exciting based on the expectations we had for him.
Of course.
Which is being, again, I think it was 2 million euros in total, the signing from Hercules. For Abde, I think that there's so much to work on and improve. And those things are actually workable, if we say. So not even just the finishing product, because the header was the best chance in the first half that Barca had. So credit to him to get himself in the box, get himself free. He also at 19 already has the broad shoulders of a man. Same thing like Nico. They're already strong. They're already 19 years old. And they're already you know, kind of filled out into their adult bodies, if you will. And that's only going to get, he's only going to get more comfortable in that body.
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as getting around his defender and then what happens next, that's going to be the biggest thing. It's the same thing with Ilescher Comas as well. We saw his skill against against Espanyol. He warmed against Villarreal. That is, now Ilias has just a mercurial talent about him that he is capable of some really, really wonderful things. There are just things that need to be improved. Obviously, you know, you could do amazing things for 98% of the field, but if you don't have that final ball, if you don't have an attack that's finished, well, then you're just a young player who's still working on those things. So for Abde, I mean, you saw how the game changed when Dembele came on. Yes, Villarreal was kind of worn down a little bit and Dembele was able to go right at him, but just how much more dangerous Dembele could be and how, and not only for Villarreal defensively, how Villarreal had to bring that second man a lot quicker. We're talking steps quicker to Dembele to slide over for those doubles than against Abde. Abde, they generally, that being Villarreal, kept him attacking 1v1 and defended him 1v1, as opposed to Dembele that always needs help. But yeah, but do you have anything more on Abde? Because we're going to, he kind of does fit into the first tactical nuance we want to talk about.
I mean, the thing with him against Villarreal specifically was that he was forced very deep. That has to be mentioned. And that kind of impacted what he could do higher up the pitch, because he needed to cover a lot more ground just because he had to cover for Eric Garcia, who had to man Mark Moy Gomez. He was pulled away, so Abde had to go down the pitch, and that kind of impacted what he could do in attack as well. So yes, I do get your point, and I agree. Dembele is more of a, let's just put it, well-rounded player now compared to Abde, because Abde is just a raw talent that needs to work a lot. But Dembele is also a similar thing. I think Dembele physically, like, you know, his explosiveness and dribbling, that's all top notch. He just needs to be, of course, he needs to be more fit. That's the first thing. And the other thing is Dembele needs to play more smartly, I guess. He needs to know how to time his runs, when to run, where to run, how to drag his marker. Sometimes he needs to run just for the sake of pulling away markers, not to expect to receive the ball. And he doesn't have those instincts just yet, I think. And that's the same thing with Abde and Ilias, even, you know, those young players, that young wingers, they need to know when to move, how to move, not just being this pure physical talent that will kind of burst past his marker and do stuff, you know, just pure talent alone.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Well, Dembele is a tough case, because if he does renew at FC Barcelona at the age of 24, the young winger is in no way what you could clarify him. It's going to be in no way what you clarify his salary. I mean, even his salary now shouldn't be clarified as young winger at 24. But, you know, as I've said before on the show, he's missed so much time that in truth, he's actually about a 21-year-old winger in terms of actually playing on the field, because of missing I mean, so many games. But speaking of young players, that's kind of what the theme of today's show is. And you've already brought up the first, basically the first mistake. And I put huge air quotes on it for those who are watching the video. The first big mistake that Xavi was honest about with his tactics was having Eric Garcia man Mark Moyes Gomez and basically play as more of a right back even than a right center back. And then Abde would come back and defend deep when Villarreal would try to strong side their left side attacking and Barcelona's right side defending. And Xavi has explained, though, that the idea is to have those wingers defend deeper. So that's not the issue here. I think then when Barcelona retake the ball, they are given space on the wings to go 1v1 against their defenders. And as that happens, now here's the missing piece of the puzzle. As that happens, the interiors need to be pushing up and making runs in behind, of which only Frankie de Jong is doing regularly, at least against Espanyol and Villarreal and not against Benfica, or a talented team that sat in a low block against Barca. And occasionally, Gavi is doing it, but he's doing it wide and around the back line as a left winger, as opposed to in those half spaces where Xavi wants his interiors to push into, you know, in this 3-4-3 lineup. But, you know, it would be great if Gavi was making that same run as the interior, but he's actually the left winger. So, I mean, pretty clear that we see the issue there, right? He's actually making the runs that I think Xavi's instructing him to make on that left wing, playing as technically this attacking left winger. But instead, you know, if he made the same run in the half space as that left interior, you could see how dangerous Gavi could be. We can see, I mean, again, you plug Pedri in the same position and you see how dangerous Pedri can be. But what I do like is that Xavi did admit that he got some things wrong. And I like that. Yeah. I'm not trying to defend Eric Garcia, but of course, tons of people, including many I respect, again, after this match, reiterated their belief that he's not at the level. But I do have to wonder what instructions he was given in that match, because Eric Garcia keeps going from, oh, he looks fine. He looks like he should be the, you know, libero, the one who is pulling all the strings, is passing, is progressive passing when Barcelona are in possession. We're all cool with all those things. And then the minute he's put on this island like this defending, then he winds up being the scapegoat for this. But I like this fact that Xavi was accountable to it and saying both he and Eric, that being and Xavi in their press conferences said, there's a lot of instructions. There's a lot going on behind the scenes and we're trying to catch up as soon as we can. And I don't think, as I said, from Eric all the way up the field, it's all connected. So don't forget that. But because he's a defender, it all comes back on him. And of course, social media is going to say, hey, he's a 20-year-old center back, but he's limited physically. So he's never going to improve. This is what Eric Garcia is. And he's Oleguer 2.0 is what I keep saying.
Well, I think generally I don't dislike the idea. So this was more of a, not really a nominal 3-4-3 system. It was more of a asymmetrical 4-3-3, because when Alba tucks in and or drops deeper into the back line, that's when Eric Garcia pushes up into the midfield. So you get the back three, but you get it with a one fullback deep and one other fullback kind of asymmetrically. He goes higher up the pitch. So, and that way you can ensure that the numerical advantage in the first line with the three defenders against Villarreal's two forwards, and you get to overload the midfield when Eric Garcia pushes up. So again, in theory, I get what Xavi was trying to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that this also impacted how Gavi moved, because as you said, Gavi would always move on the outside. And that's because when Alba would tuck in, there was no one else to provide a width on the left side. And you remember, Xavi wants to have both of his wingers wide, at least initially, and then Gavi would tuck in eventually when Alba overlaps. But if Alba is deep into the back line, then no one else can provide the width on the left side. And that's where Gavi comes in. He has to be the one who can stretch the pitch and stretch the back line and ensure that there's more space in the half spaces for Barca and Memphis to operate. So that's kind of the thing with Gavi. And with Eric Garcia, yes, I do agree. He's excellent on the ball, but then physically and defensively in one-on-one duels, he's not as proficient. The way he operates is he's more of a early prevention kind of thing. So he will have to read the game much better and much faster than his opposition and then kind of intercept the ball before the danger is, you know, on high alert. So I think that's how he operates. And how does Xavi kind of combat that? I don't know. He can either try and improve that aspect of his game or kind of try and cover with other profiles in the back line, with like Araujo, for example. Araujo would have to cover for Eric in those situations. And I guess that is the only way that Eric is going to kind of succeed, I guess. I mean, I don't dislike him. I think he has a lot of potential. And I will release a piece on him very soon, because I find this all very, very interesting to kind of talk about. But at the moment, he's not exactly playing to the full of his potential, but he is a key cog in at Barcelona's backline because he is the only profile that's purely ball progression. When it comes to ball progression, no one can touch him, really. Araujo is not that good on the ball. He is decent, but not as good as Eric. And PK is kind of diminishing. And then you have Longley and Umtiti, who are good on the ball, but at the same time, they're not really reliable. So I guess he is necessary, but at the same time, there's always a risk with him. So it's a strange case.
Well, I think, too, that whether because neither Araujo or Eric Garcia are left-footed, you understand right. why Xavi put Eric Garcia on the right side, because as we keep saying that they, I mean, this will probably not change when Ansu comes back either. I mean, it could when Ansu comes back and you actually have a real left winger starting on the touchline and just attacking. But again, he's not this, this dribbling left winger. So I would actually not be that surprised if in this system, Ansu plays in the middle and Memphis plays on the left and you let him dribble a little bit more, but we'll have to see what happens there. That said, I understand why it was Langley against Benfica, as I said before, and then Araujo as the left center back starting against Villarreal. Well, it was actually PK as the left center back, and then Araujo in the middle playing basically, you know, snuff everything out. And that makes sense because, I mean, while PK can pass the ball, Eric is actually a better passer, or at least breaks lines a little bit more and is a bit more with his progressive passing, essential to the system of possession. And so I understand why you want to put your best center back passer on the side that is just with a 1v1 winger behind, so that when you strong side the other side, that left center back doesn't have to pass the ball 15 or 20 yards and break a line. So you're putting all the onus on your right center back to break that line, as opposed to, again, Benfica and Lenglet is a better example of this than PK, because PK is, again, a better passer than Lenglet. But Lenglet only had to make 10 to 15 to 20 yard passes to Alba, to Gabi, to Frankie or Nico, and then to Busquets or back to one of the other center backs. So his passing range, which is that left center back passing range, is so much more limited. But yeah, and then your point on Araujo, 7 ball recoveries, won all 5 of his duels, 5 clearances, 2 interceptions, didn't commit a single foul. And other than the shot that went wide by Danjuma, Araujo was everywhere he needed to be. And so Barcelona have at least one defender, at least one very high quality passing, progressive passing center back. And then they also have the leadership of Gerard Pique, which I actually think under Xavi, now that he has people to lead again, that being PK, I think he's found his role as a leader. And while he cannot physically do all of it, I think it's worked out. And then the final point I have about these center backs, before I throw it over to you, is that Albert Roge, who he's very well trusted throughout the academy, sport journalist, also reported that Diego Almeida, who I talked about before, he got called up to the Ecuadorian national team, which is huge for him at 17, plays with a Juvenil Oz. He noticed, that being Roge, that Almeida was playing the same position that Eric Garcia played for Juvenil A. And what Almeida is he's a little bit, I mean, he's still 17. He's still growing into his body, but he's maybe not going to be Araujo, but he's going to be physically, I think, a bit more impressive, at least at this point, than Eric Garcia. But he is a right center back playing out wide, basically as a right back this weekend for Juvenil A. So that's another thing where I wonder, is this an entire system change? Is Xavi asking a certain thing of the profile of a right center back moving forward? And these are just structural things that you have to wonder. And then the one player I wanted you to talk about with this is the 20-year-old left-footed center back, Mika Marmol for Barca B. He's a case where, is he really ready to take that job over from Lenglet, PK Garcia, or Umtiti? Because just like Easy Abde or Ilias, I could see, just like you, I could see Marmol getting some time over Lenglet in Umtiti or Garcia playing at left center back, because Marmol might be the profile that Xavi is looking for that position.
He definitely is, because Mika is very progressive and he's left-footed, and that is kind of a commodity in world football now. It's just finding a left-footed center back is just amazing. And I think that he has the skill set to kind of fit into Xavi's system, because he's very comfortable on the ball. He can run with the ball. When he sees the space, he will exploit it. He will go for it. He will dribble if he has to, and then he will deploy a pass that can break lines and can connect the thirds as well. So I think in that aspect, he is the perfect fit, actually. So yeah, he is very young, so you can never know how that transition is going to go. Maybe he doesn't do as well, but I think that he has the potential to do well. And I would definitely trust him over Umtiti and Longley. I would just try it out and see how he goes, because you don't have much to lose with such a player, because the upside is just incredible. If it does work out, like Araujo, for example, you've solved a major issue in a team that you haven't been able to fix for years now, I guess, even. And I would give him a shot because he's not the most physical one. He is pretty tall, I think, but not as like not physically too strong. He's still a decent duelist still, but not at Araujo level. No, nowhere near that. But he can match forwards with pace mostly. He is decently fast and excellent on the ball. So I would just say he is the perfect fit for that left center back position. I've said this before, and now I stand by it. And I think that Xavi is eventually going to kind of take the leap and just see if it works out.
Well, yeah, I mean, that brings up, I think, the bigger question and really the reason why I wanted to bring you back on the show, because like some of the research you're doing and some of the thoughts that we'll say the pathway from Barca B or Juvenil A or the academy in gen at large to the first team was this place that under the likes of Sergio Roberto, and then we're skipping ahead, we're talking about Carlos Alenia, we're talking about Gerard Deulofeu. I think that conversation is well trod about players having difficulty getting to the first team. But now it seems like the dam has been broken completely open out of necessity for both financial reasons, as well as the talent itself deserving to be first team players for FC Barcelona in the likes of Gabi and Nico and Ansu. I mean, again, Eric Garcia is, La Masia raised, but he was brought back in as a transfer, but a free transfer. So that made sense with that deal. Pedri, again, brought from Las Palmas, so doesn't fall under that umbrella. Just happens to be around the same age. Sergino Dest, was brought in. Araujo even was brought in from Uruguay, not being a La Masia product, if you will. So even though they are young, Oscar Mangueza and Callado are two of the other ones that I'm missing on that list. But yeah, the question now we ask, when we think about Easy Abde, and now we're having this conversation about Ismar Mole, what would be needed for the left center back spot? I do want to ask broadly, how many youngsters are too many youngsters? Because Xavi is showing, especially with Ilias, a willingness where, I mean, I'd said, and people who watch him, I mean, shouts to Navid Mulligai, who watched him for years as well, that he might be christened in the academy as this, the Moroccan Messi and all this, things to roll our eyes on. But I felt like he was a year or two away. It felt like he was a year or two away when you watch him with Juvenil A. He was making some appearances for Barca B. He got that brace, but he hasn't even been a regular for Barca B. So playing with the Juvenil A's even this season. So for him to make the jump to a first team, it is surprising to me because I think the club all felt like, okay, he'll be ready someday. But then you have so many other youngsters that we can talk about. Hunter Orellana, who's injured now and on and off for 2 years. Alvaro Sanz, both defensive midfielders, with Busquets' age, why would those guys not get opportunities potentially? Chus Alba has that ability to push very high. So if Xavi's going to play two high interiors, Chus Alba, an 18-year-old, Juvenil A is a good look. Arnau Kosas, who's a right-footed center back, 17 years old. I think put a pin in that one, a few years on him. Marc Quesada is another one. He's, 17, 18 years old, around that age too. And then you have center forwards, like Victor Barbera, who was just brought in to the academy to Juvenil A from, I think it was Royce, or maybe, oh, no, Dom. It was Esteban Pedrola who was brought in from Royce. But anyway, then Fabian Luzzi, who was brought in from Rayo Vallecano. He's 17 as well. Then Angel Alarcón, who's been injured. I really like Alarcón. I actually think he would be in the first team dynamic on that left wing if he wasn't injured for this entire year. But it just feels like too many youngsters. You can't have that many young players in your squad. And if anything, I can let you, you've written so much about all these different players, so you can dish on whichever ones you want. But for me, actually, I would like to see more of, if I have to say one youngster I'd stick my neck out for, it's Alejandro Balde. I think Balde, who now came on as a substitute for Barca B of the weekend with Alba getting injured, that was the right moment for Balde. It's just wrong place at the wrong time in this instance, where he was on the bench and Alba was healthy. Alba gets the knock and Balde isn't there. He's playing with Barca B. But I think Balde is the exact player on that left wing to come in for Alba. And not only that, but to start occasionally. And I think there's something that Xavi might think he's missing, or he's just, trusting Alba in this opportunity, right? That it's a new manager. Yeah. He wants Alba to be the one to be instructed with those instructions. But I think Balde, by April or May, I could easily see him being fully in the first team and just coming off the bench a lot, making appearances, maybe even more so over Dest, depending on the system and tactics that Xavi wants to employ.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would definitely put Balde ahead of Dest on the left side. Definitely. Dest on the left side was decent at times, but I just don't see it long term. I just don't see it. He has to be on the right side. As for Balde just taking over Alba, yes, he was one of the youngsters that I really thought I was going to make it right now. The situation was like prime for him with the Alba, with the injuries and all that stuff, but he just disappeared for some reason. And I think his time will still come. He he can and he has the potential to do so. It remains to be seen how well he can handle the wing back role, sort of, that Xavi's trying to do with the 3-4-3 system. We'll see how that goes. Is that going to play to his strengths or not? I'm not sure at the moment. We'll see. We'll have to scout that a bit more. Just generally on youngsters, I think, yes, I believe there always has to be a healthy mix of youth and experience. That's kind of a given. But at the same time, Barcelona is somewhat unique in this regard, purely because of the academy, because using academy players and using quote-unquote foreign players who you bought on the market is not nearly the same thing, especially in Barca's case. That's because Barcelona's philosophy and this kind of very specific style of play are completely ingrained across all youth levels, and that makes a difference, because when you promote from within, you are getting a player who is, yes, of course, he doesn't have any real experience at the highest levels, like in La Liga, for example, but you're getting a player who is very comfortable with the style of play of the first team. So you are getting a player who knows their role and knows how to perform them well, because that's, you know, that's what they've been doing for the whole careers, if they were in La Masia for a longer period of time, that is. So whether it's the Benjamin level, the Juvenil level, Barca B, they all play the same style of football. And that's the same style the first team wants to play. So I think that's a huge point towards having like more youngsters in the team. So what do you think the likes of Gavi and Nico have kind of hit the ground running, because they have the experience of already playing in the same system? So I would still prefer having, you know, a healthy mix of youth and experience, of course, you know, just for the biggest of occasions, you know, kind of the decisive games, the Champions League nights, and, you know, cup finals, whatnot. But generally speaking, I don't see it as such a big problem. But of course, there always has to be a balance. So yeah, that's what I would say.
Well, there's a downside too, because Youssef Demir started in what was Barcelona's, I mean, you could argue, is going to go down in their most important match of the season against Benfica. Mm-hmm. And in that match, and Demir is a player that looks like, I mean, I thought he was bright in that game with the two attempts. He could have had a brace with 4 inches. I said that before in last week's show, but yeah, I think Demir is an example of a player that where there is too many youngsters. You just don't have enough mm-hmm. time to carve out for the guy that doesn't exactly fit. And so if you have Demir and you have Coutinho sitting there, and I know they play on the left wing and the right wing, so it's not the same, but if you have Coutinho and you have Demir, I think Xavi is like, okay, I'm going to trust obviously Coutinho in this instance, right? There's a reason why BZ is who he is, why he's such a problem in that he's too good of a player to be just a bench option or to be this guy on the peripheral of the first team. Yeah. And so the last two points I kind of want to talk about, the last two gentlemen I want to talk about is back with the first team. So I don't know. Do you have anything more on the youngsters? Because again, I threw out a lot of names out there at you. I think Mikko Marmol was the one that you and I both agree, other than Balde and names you've already heard of. I think Marmol mm-hmm. would be the next one to potentially break in. However, again, at the left center back spot, I mean, he is technically behind Umtiti and behind Lenglet and technically also behind Piqué and Eric Garcia. So I could very much see that not happening. But Hondo Orellana, I think that would be the other name. And I also mentioned, I had said Ángel Alarcón, but unfortunately those two are injured. And I think if you get injured at the wrong time, which is when a new manager like Xavi comes in, sometimes that can mean that you never get the look that you're expected to get. I think Xavi will do his due diligence, but once he's in season like this, it might be difficult for those two to prove themselves. And again, Ángel might be out for quite some more time. And Hondo as well has just not been able to stay healthy. But those would be my two picks. But do you have anybody else?
Well, Yandro, definitely. I always believe that if he didn't get injured, he would have already been in the first team. Definitely, because he is like the perfect Busquets replacement. We've seen a lot of names thrown out there as Busquets replacements, Nico being one of them, but he turned out to be a slightly different profile. But Yandro is kind of exactly the pivot that Barca would need, although he has played as the interior as well. I would also say that Marc Cassado is one of that that I love a lot. He is exactly the type of profile that you would want at that number six position as well, at least in my mind. So them two, if we're talking about midfielders, them two would definitely be my shout. And then Mika, well, with Mika it's difficult. Yeah, you are right, he is behind in the pecking order, but at the same time I think that Lenglet and Umtiti are at this point where you don't really trust them anymore. So might as well give a shot to Mika.
Well, we also don't know how January will change that as well. If someone does come calling for, likely those calls aren't going to come from PT, but if somebody does call about Lang Lay, because you could do, for the rest of world football, you could do a lot worse than Lang Lay. And it's funny too, because we keep saying Newcastle will be the ones that bail out Barcelona. But I think having watched their last game, they could use a left center back and actually use a left center back on the field, right? As much as we talk about Coutinho and all those other players that Newcastle would grab, but Lang Lay is actually a player that would fit in. But speaking of Coutinho, I want to go back to him real quick. You could tell that winning that PK, I mean, questionable in the 93rd minute, it was just Coutinho kind of not following instruction, but kind of doing his own thing. And he winds up getting fouled in the box. And then Memphis gives him the penalty kick and he converts it. Just because you see what that meant to him, his second goal of the season, his first one having coming months ago against Valencia. So both goals against the Valencian community teams. But for Coutinho, I mean, where did he go from here? I mean, Xavi, Koeman, they've all said, oh, he's going to be an important part. But when you look at this system and I look at the tactics, and I did this in the Xavi tactics video, the more and more I think about it, the more I just cannot understand where he's going to fit. Because even though Coutinho is talented enough to play, if he is not playing as a number 10, if there is not a system that's revolving around him, I just don't see how he fits in Xavi's 3-4-3 or even in the 4-3-3. It just doesn't make sense to me.
No, I would agree with that. Yes, I don't think that his position exists anymore, especially in Xavi's system. He cannot really play as an interior because Xavi wants his interiors to kind of push forward, make those runs constantly. He can receive in the half space. He can create from the half space, but he cannot be that aggressive kind of runner that Xavi wants in the team. He cannot do that. So I don't think that that position is meant for him at all. And there are players who can do it much better than he can. Then you could put him down the middle, but then the only position that's available down the middle would be a false nine type of thing. And I don't see him there either because he is, I don't know, he just needs the number 10 position, which was never there for him to begin with. And that's the whole issue with Coutinho. He cannot start as the right winger either because he's not a natural winger. And again, Xavi wants him to hold the width when Alba is deep. I don't know. I at the moment, I don't see him getting anything bigger than just cameo appearances and in the last 10 or 15 minutes of games and trying to do something just with pure talent and skill, just something individually, which he can do. He is a very good player still in his day, but he is just a player who doesn't fit, and that's it.
Well, that's why I think against Espanyol and Villarreal, we saw that it wasn't about Coutinho coming on as much as it was that Barcelona, not to say they reverted back to their old ways, but there are a certain system that you have to play with Coutinho. Once he's on the field, it kind of changes the way you're playing. Puig the same way, where it's risk, it's reward, where with Coutinho and Puig, they're coming on as high interiors and they do a certain job, and that job can lead to goals. That's why Coutinho got his goal. And that's why Puig does so often in his limited time. The things, the actions he makes oftentimes leads to comebacks and goals and different things. But in the same way, those systems have to be built around them. And so that's why you're seeing Coutinho and Puig just aren't being utilized as 90-minute players, because it's the risk of what happens about that space left in behind by Puig, about not only the space left in behind by Coutinho, but also losing width, as you just mentioned. Now, a player that system-wise, we've said left wing, center forward, as I've also mentioned too, it's not crazy to think that Memphis could ideally find himself, if Pedri winds up playing on the left wing and Ansu's in the middle and Dembele stays fit on the right, then Memphis could also finally get rotated. As I keep kind of arguing with people that we yell about Busquets getting rotated finally, maybe potentially not having to play 90 minutes. Memphis has had to play 90 minutes every match. As long as Ansu is out, Memphis plays and is on the field as a number nine, because Luke de Jong, and Memphis tired is better than Luke de Jong at all. I mean, not only what Koeman has decided, but clearly Xavi didn't ask for Luke de Jong, and Luke de Jong is not going to play. So don't worry about that. But, you know, I saw that Memphis, there was an image of him hugging the post in the first half. And I was like, I saw that and I said, all the major outlets are definitely going to be using that as their JPEG. That's going to be the match report if this one ends 0-0. You know, but now they can use a celebration because he winds up scoring the goal. But I don't think we're understanding how much that Memphis is being asked to do up top. I mean, yeah, he's missing chances, but I just want to quickly throw a little Memphis defense in here that he has scored in his last four league matches. He has 7 goals in 13 games. So he is still pretty much, when Ansu comes back, I expect that number to go up, actually, even though Ansu will be scoring too. But, you know, 7 goals in 13 games is on pace for a 20-plus goal season, which is what we were asking of Memphis, right? He came on a free transfer. How many goals did you want him to get? 20 to 24. And I did this whole thing in the beginning of the year where I counted. I mean, losing Messi is a lot of goals you lose. Losing Griezmann's goals, a lot of goals are used. So if Barcelona were going to score the, what was it, 84 goals or something, or 88 goals that basically wins you a top three spot in the Liga, if they were going to score that many goals, I'm trying to do the math. You know what I mean? And Memphis had to get somewhere in the 20 to 24, 25 range. You needed Ansu to get somewhere between 18 and 25, and he is obviously injured and not been able to do that. You needed Dembélé to get somewhere between 11 and 15, but because Memphis is the only one on the field, I think he's getting all the punishment, all the ire, and all the frustration that the goals just aren't pouring in. But again, 7 goals in 13 games in the Liga is just fine, and it seems like he's on pace.
He is, definitely is. And I think that Barcelona fans can be, we can be a bit too premature with our criticism. And one day a player is a hero, the next day he is like the scapegoat, and that happens to everyone, Memphis included. And I feel like he does so many things well. He's so versatile, maybe a bit too much for his own good. He can hold up play. He can be a runner. He can dribble. He can pass. There's so many things that he can do well, and he does well. He creates overloads. He understands his role, which is very important here as well. And I think that, I mean, as long as he can kind of sustain this, he is a good transfer. He is someone that will kind of, yes, he's a free transfer, so he doesn't have to pay off his transfer fee, but he'll be worth it. He'll be worth it if he can continue doing what he's doing right now. Of course, he can hog the ball a bit too much times. We know that. He can make a couple of touches too many. That's also true. But at the same time, he is the one who's basically providing the final product. He is the one who's doing so many good things that kind of seem to be forgotten so many times, and the people seem to sweep them under the rug, kind of. And they like to focus on the negatives because that's what gets you, I don't know, just interactions and your tweets blow up when you criticize players, I guess. But overall, I feel like he is doing a very good job, considering that he's a free transfer, considering that he has to play as much as he has to play, and that Barca don't really have a better option at the moment. That's also a big thing. Until Ansu is back, he's the main man. And so far, he's not doing a bad job, I would say.
No, I mean, again, he's being asked to do a lot. He's being asked to hold up. He's being asked to drop deep in this new system. The tactics are changing around him again. His job is to put the ball in the back of the net. But he, there are a lot of misses he has. But the bright side is the Barca are creating chances. And when there is more space for him to actually get those shots off, when, again, the likes of Dembélé are pulling the extra defender, we're talking about the margins. We're talking about 2-3 feet or 2-3 meters that defenders are getting pulled over. That gives such a larger shooting lane for Memphis. And the same thing when Ansu comes back. The gravity of Ansu attracts so many players to him. Memphis will start to finish because he'll have a little bit more room. He'll just have that extra little bit that he needs to convert on these chances. So, Domagoj, as we're wrapping this show up, anything else more from you? I mean, I'm going to give you, again, a moment to plug some of your stuff right now. You're working a lot of different stuff on Twitter and your articles, and I know that there's a Substack as well with your name on it, so I'll give you a chance for that. But before that, do you have anything else? Because I know between tactics and La Masia, I want to make sure I use your time well.
I think we've covered most of it. I mean, if you have any more questions, I'm happy to answer them. But I think that's pretty much it from me.
Yeah, so my last question is, where can people find you again?
You can find me on Twitter at the Kostanchuk. That's my Twitter handle.
That's in the show notes, so everyone just head on down, click on his name in the show notes, and we'll have you there.
Exactly. And I've started a new Substack. It's Barca Football. I do analysis, player reports, and just my rambling. If you want to read that, feel free to visit us and subscribe. It's completely free, so not costing anything just now. And I do a lot of Twitter threads, as you mentioned. If you're interested in La Masia players, that's kind of my new thing. I want to profile as many La Masia players as I can, and so far I've done about 10 of them, I think, something like that. So going pretty well. If you're interested in that, just check it out.
All right. So Domagoj Goy again, future superstar in the making, especially in the Barca community. I think you're already a star there, but that'll wrap it up for another edition of the show. Again, follow him on Twitter. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the Barcelona Pod, at Hope and D13 for me. Close Facebook group, the Barcelona Podcast. Patreon is how we keep making these shows. Always, always appreciate with the new patrons. You can also listen to these shows without the ads over there. It's a little incentive to support the show financially. And we're on YouTube with those match reviews. Now that the international breaks are over, those are coming out well. And I really appreciate all the new people we've met on YouTube there. So the match reviews and some other special stuff going on at the Barcelona Podcast. So thanks so much for listening to the show, though. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barça.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.